Welcome back to How Would You Beat, where we discuss how you can use jobs to be done, innovation methods to beat your competition. Remember to subscribe and like this podcast. In this episode, we'll look at how you could beat banks. Banks are in the news because of the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. Silicon Valley Bank had a $40 billion market cap that went to zero almost overnight. So what happened, and can jobs be done help us figure out how to both create better banks and lower the risk of bank collapses and runs on the bank that potentially become contagion and have a negative impact on the economy? So Jared, let's review. What happened with Silicon Valley Bank?
It's interesting because out of the gate, I thought that Silicon Valley Bank was a great business. They had a growing target segment. They were laser focused on that segment and satisfied unmet needs. So they were focused on startups and the ecosystem around startups who were raising capital at a rapid pace. It was, as a startup, it's hard to get banked because you don't have a lot of credit history and you don't have revenue. So it's hard to get loans as well. And they serviced a bunch of unmet needs in startups' ability to finance their operations.
Yeah, and so it's a great jobs to be done market. You know, it's a segment. They were very successful, obviously, for 40 years. They made just an incredibly strange short-term risk problem into a devastating one, which is they saw a huge increase in liabilities in the form of deposits during the pandemic. A lot of new venture funding went into startups and they put all that cash into Silicon Valley Bank. Those are liabilities on the bank. And then they effectively invested those into long-term assets in the form of treasury bonds. And of course, interest rates went up and the value of bonds goes down when interest rates go up. So they had losses and they had to raise capital. And banks are highly regulated. So when their ratios change, you know, their assets, liabilities, and all sorts of other metrics, they have to make sure they shore that up. And that set off a very small community of venture capitalists with outsized influence over hundreds and thousands of companies who that small group collectively at the same time said, all get out of Silicon Valley Bank. So then because they had these long-term assets and $42 billion was withdrawn just in one day last Thursday, that just meant the bank was insolvent. It couldn't keep sending that money out and stay solvent. So it's an interesting situation. And can jobs be done and jobs theory help us figure out how to prevent that in the future? And as well, how to create the next Silicon Valley Bank, where you're serving customers in a different set of customers in a different segment in a different way. Because there is still a lot of opportunity for innovation in banking and just financial services, you know, in general. Obviously, there's tons of jobs that banks are being hired to do by their customers. So what can jobs be done theory tell us about building the next great bank?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And I'm having a hard time with it, to be honest, which is unusual on this podcast. Usually it's pretty straightforward, right? And in this case, what I've heard in the news is that Silicon Valley Bank's focus on a target segment and serving their needs extremely well became a risk because they didn't have a diversity of deposits. So when that ecosystem ran into trouble and stopped raising money so fast and ran into headwinds, it impacted them in an existential way rather than just being a pocket of their business. So it seems like the way they could have, one way to avoid this might have been to have a more diverse customer base and gotten more jobs done for a wider group of people.
Yeah, that's right. And I think there's a few things. They did choose a customer base that has enormous concentration of influence and power. And that's just because a small number of VCs, the number of VCs relative to the number of companies that were the customers of Silicon Valley Bank is a very large ratio. So, you know, there were some famous VCs getting together, tweeting out and telling their companies, you know, get out of Silicon Valley Bank now. And so that was a big risk for them. That I think is that should be able to be mitigated. You know, it was very bad communication on the part of Silicon Valley Bank not to get together with this small group who clearly has outside influence and say, not only are we in good shape, so don't worry about it. We're going to raise capital to make you even more secure. And those venture investors have access to a lot of capital. So there were, PE and venture investors who were willing to put that capital up. They're always looking for good returns on capital. And clearly, you know, Silicon Valley Bank had a hold on this segment, but they shot themselves in the foot. Instead of getting together and saying, hey, we need this institution. Of course, a lot of them came in afterward. Like, this institution served our needs and we can talk about what the job is for those companies and those investors. And they shot themselves in the foot by, instead of getting together, you know, any bank could have a run on it. If everybody at the same time says, let's all take our money out immediately, I mean, every bank will fail. Mm-hmm. And that brings up the regulatory solution to a lot of markets. And, you know, there's debates about regulation, but this is such a good example of where you're trying to get the job done. The actual customers in the business should be protected. So there's a lot of debate around, obviously, around the moral hazard of saying, well, everybody's account, their deposits are insured 100%. But that's effectively what just happened. The U.S. government said, you can be assured that all of your deposits are safe. And the customers are not the ones who should be at risk. I do think that the calls for, like, well, this is creating moral hazard because you're going to protect the cash, literally the deposits of the customers, will create moral hazard on the part of the executives of the bank is a very bizarre way to think about it, because you for precisely what happened with Silicon Valley Bank. It is going to spin out of control and everybody is going to withdraw all of their money that Monday morning without the backstop of the U.S. government. So this is why the activities of the bank and what they do with the customers' deposits, that job of mitigating banking risk is the one that should be done by banks. But if anything in history tells us anything, it is that they won't do a good job of it unless they're under regulations to do it. It is,
yeah,
whatever human nature. This is just another example. This is there's so many examples of this. There's too many to go through. In 2008 was an example of the entire system doing it simultaneously. And people forget that in 2008, banks wouldn't lend to other banks. That is what happened for the first time in our history. And it's because we said, okay, banks, you know, don't need regulation anymore. Create, you know, crazy securities that the government doesn't even know the value of those securities. And it stopped the system.
So is this a case where they created a great product and got their customer's job done well, but they made some back office mistakes? Is that what's happening here?
Yeah, a little bit of both. So let's talk about their success first and then talk about their failure. So their success is that companies who are unprofitable, you know, by definition, startups starting out of the gate, you know, someone wires you $10 million in your bank account as a startup, or sometimes $100 million or $1 billion, and you're unprofitable. You know, a lot of banks will say, no, we're not going to, you know, finance this, essentially take the risk on your deposits, because it is highly likely you're just going to draw down a lot of that capital pretty quickly, because it's known as the burn rate, because you're literally burning through cash. Your company is not yet generating cash.
And that's bad for a bank, because if a depositor just continuously withdraws, then the bank can't put that money to work in the same way as if it were to sit there for a long time.
That's right. So you know, you have to have a broad set of customers who are getting cash in, and then the other ones are burning it. And then there's always ones that are shutting down. In venture, you know, the majority of companies actually just end up shutting down. So they burn through all that cash, then it's zero, and then you're no longer a Silicon Valley Bank customer. So you can see why, you know, banks are hesitant. They want someone, a company or an individual who's got a huge amount of cash that they're putting in the bank account, and they're just keeping it there, right? Now, companies
and growing
cash
it and adding
and
more.
Growing it, right? That's right. So they are riskier customers, but they have needs. They have got to be able to access their cash. They've got to be able to make payroll. They've got to optimize their cash flow. They've got to have visibility into their burn rate, and they've got an accurate assessment of their working capital. There's a lot in being a company, but also a startup, that's trying to get you visibility into, like, are you going to be successful? And those financial metrics, at the end of the day, every company has to become profitable. The capital markets will, you know, shut you off. I mean, we've been in these crazy capital markets that will fund losses forever and ever, seemingly. But at the end of the day, you have to become a profitable company. And so they were, if you looked at the job, it is finance my company's growth. My company's unprofitable growth to profitability. You could say it in multiple ways, but that is a different job than, you know, Apple, which is managing, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars of cash, and it just keeps growing as a pile of cash. You know, right. That's just an entirely different job than optimize my cash flow for to turn my unprofitability into profitability, right? Mm-hmm. That's the underlying job, which is very complicated. You know, you could look at that job; it's got hundreds of needs, and you can see why it's underserved, because it's hard for the customers, the startups, to execute it well, and then it's hard for a bank to judge whether or not the startup is executing that well, mm-hmm. right? So it's a very specific segment that does need to be served now. That is also an opportunity for JP Morgan Chase, Wells, you know, First Republic, these other mid-sized and big banks should be thinking, okay, what are the services and the solutions and the products that we need to build for this community? Because now there's, you know, a couple hundred billion dollars of deposits that are available. That's a lot for, you know, any bank to be able to say, okay, what do we do to serve this community? And, you know, hopefully Silicon Valley Bank does get a new owner, because in my view, also, this was not a bailout. The equity holders were wiped out. I think the bond holders are going to be totally wiped out, which is 100%.
Yeah, so they got their comeuppance, right? If you're an executive, like, you're not walking away with a lot of money here. You're getting, you know, they probably have their own personal wealth, but they're not making money off Silicon Valley Bank right now.
Yeah, and there's potentially criminal charges. I mean, they should be investigating the executives, definitely, who sold shares and paid themselves bonuses with all this massive risk. You know, clearly there were people inside the bank telling the CEO and the executives, we have to manage this risk, and they didn't have a chief risk officer for 8 months. I mean, there's all sorts of red flags. So, you know, you could have seen this coming a while ago, and some short sellers did. You know, they were very aware of the problem. They didn't know that, you know, the whole thing would collapse in 48 hours, but they were like, this bank is in a very risky position. And that's where short sellers are. You know, that's the reason it's a function in the market, is it's those kind of signals. Now the regulators missed it too. So there's a whole bunch of stuff the regulators should have been doing. But at the end of the day, the depositors are not looking to take this kind of risk. And as many people have pointed out, you don't go to your bank and say, excuse me, can you give me your risk analysis? Can I evaluate you know, your short versus long-term assets and do my own kind of calculation? I mean, the average company doesn't have time to do that, let alone the average. Like,
no, if they have a charter, you assume your money's safe there.
Yeah, yeah. There's no benefit to telling depositors you're going to be wiped out if you're the CEO of your bank makes some really stupid moves. You know,
right?
That's not a world I want to live in. And that's the way the world used to work, right? This is why we had the Great Depression. This is why we built Glass-Steagall as a regulatory framework, and then we dismantled it, and then we had to, and 2008 happened, and then we had to build Dodd-Frank, and then they dismantled part of it in 2018. It's repeating the same game, and it's so silly, because people, you know, short-term bankers, when I say short-term, even like a 10 years, bankers want to go in and make a ton of money, you know, have their stock go up, which is exactly what happened with Silicon Valley Bank. You know, they didn't want to have to pay to hedge all this risk. And, you know, hedging is a real job. Like, hedging is to mitigate risk. The reason that is a viable financial market is precisely for this reason. You want insurance. You know, there's a whole different question about what happened in the CDO world, in the unregulated insurance world, which you don't want. But this is, it happens again and again and again. So yes, we need the regulatory framework to stop this from happening. We need to make sure depositors don't risk their cash. And we need to help banks get the job done better. They need to do it now. They're under a lot of regulations, of course, but that doesn't mean there isn't opportunities for innovation, right? You know, they still have underserved customers.
Yeah. So I mean, it sounds like one insight here is if you are a large bank with a diversity of depositors already, there's an opportunity for you to now pick up Silicon Valley Bank's depositors. And if you're going to do that, you need to deeply understand what the job is they're trying to get done, which is different from some of the other business depositors you have, because they're in a unique situation where they're going from unprofitable to profitable or attempting to. And if you understand those needs, you can offer the right services and pick up a pretty large market opportunity right now. It sounds like there's another insight too, which is there's an internal operations job, a risk mitigation job that the banks need to do for themselves. So in that way, the bank is the customer. They need to mitigate their own risk. And you could say, well, the regulatory agencies are play a role in, as a solution for that. The internal risk department plays an important role in that solution. And I think there's another question of, could there be a third party that provides a solution to these banks? So if you are a mid-sized bank and you want to take the strategy that SVB took, where we want to find a very targeted segment with specific needs, and we want to serve those really well. We think there's a great opportunity there, but we want to cover ourselves and don't end up in the same situation. Could a third party provide a solution to a bank to satisfy their needs to mitigate their own risk?
Yeah, that's great. And the answer to that is yes, absolutely. That is a market that will grow because the job, you can define that as mitigate depository risk, right? Mm-hmm. Now, one solution to that is just have the U.S. government insure it, which should be part of it, but the government should require, and clearly after situations like this, regulations change and the government realizes, okay, people got to play by some new rules. We got to have our regulators reviewing this stuff better. But of course, like every job, you know, mitigate deposit risk is a lot of information where that information has to be analyzed to make decisions. And this is where software and algorithms are just so incredibly powerful. It is why, it's why the internet was just created so much equity value. And it's why AI is going to create an enormous amount of equity value in markets like banking, where you train a specific set of algorithms, call it AI or algorithms, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't have to be smart. It's not going to be a robot, you know, butler talking to you. Right. But it'll be a way. Silicon Valley Bank clearly didn't have this, which is you need the people reviewing it, but the tools, the application should just literally get their data and say, nope, you're at enormous risk right now. And that's where it can even program, okay, here are the trades you need to make. You need to buy these options, yeah, you know, to hedge this interest rate risk or whatever the type of risk it is. And, you know, the humans can still execute it, but that should be automatic. That shouldn't even be, there should be no bank that can take the option of going outside of those rules. And a great example of this is the airlines. The FAA, you know, people forget the early days of aviation, it was like 10% of flights had some sort of incident. I don't think they crashed and died, but we didn't really know how to fly safely for a long time. And the FAA came and said, okay, this is, you got to, every single airplane, and I know this, I worked as a, you know, very low level aircraft mechanic, on very small planes, and every single screw, every single, you know, bolt, every single thing on an airplane has to adhere to regulations because they don't want someone being like, I just didn't screw that thing in right. You know, the torque amount is set. It's incredibly detailed. And that's what we want because, you know, you're flying 600 miles an hour, 30,000 feet. You want to know this thing's not flying out of the, falling out of the sky, and you don't want your bank to fall out of the sky. So this, and of course, even in aviation, there are now software tools that help with all this stuff. And there will be more advanced banking software tools to mitigate that deposit risk.
Yeah. So it's interesting because in this case, we're saying when SVB was considering selling the bonds at a loss, could there have been a platform to signal to them, hey, there's an outsized risk here. that when people get wind of this asset sale, they're going to get very nervous about your bank and they're going to start pulling money out. And it makes me wonder, did anybody inside see that coming? And there was an internal debate and they decided to do it in spite of the risk, or did they just miss the risk?
No, that's where I think the investigations are going to be incredible. There are already stories. I'll try and find these links, but there were so many stories about them. But they're one, the internal employees were effectively screaming that they needed to mitigate this risk, but it cost tens of millions of dollars to hedge that kind of risk. So they knew it before interest rates moved. And certainly before they moved at the amount that, you know, set off the bank run and collapsed the bank. So they should have mitigated that. And that's where the software would help, because the job is to mitigate that risk. So that, you know, obviously, again, like all jobs, very, very complicated, a lot of variables, you know, a lot of decisions, and done by humans with like spreadsheets today, likely, you know, with some software I'm sure is helping. Right. But that's a huge part of the market, is that kind of early warning system. Then you combine, in the same way that you have software that monitors, you know, aircraft engines. You can't just like fire up an engine and be like, "Hey, let's go flying across the country," right? I mean, it gets tested all the time, and they have metrics, and they're like, "Does this engine work?" And if it fails, then you can't even fly that plane. And that should be that's the exact, you know, analogy. It works really well. And to carry the aircraft, you know, metaphor, also people forget, like, we saved the passengers, right? The depositors are the passengers.
Right.
And no one would argue, which is why I think it's very strange that people are arguing like we should have let the depositors lose a ton of money. It's like,
yes, I agree.
You're sitting there watching the airplane, you know, its engine's on fire and it's headed right towards a major city with millions of people. And and you're like, "Oh, well, let's just make sure the passengers die to teach them a moral hazard lesson."
Right,
it's an insane way to think about the world
and
humans, because we always want to save the passengers, right? And then when that plane lands and it turns out that the CEO forgot to like do the test on the engine, the CEO should be fired, the company should lose all its equity, and
that's what's happening here.
The executives should go to jail if they broke laws, right? I mean, that's what's happening. But the idea that like we let the passengers die is, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I heard an interesting thing on the Daily, the New York Times Daily, where the reporter from the New York Times said that the FDIC leaders were saying, "Gee, we wish SVB had come to us before they sold those bonds, because we might have given them some cash to prop them up and get them through this." And I think that's interesting when you think about the psychology of going hat in hand to the regulatory agency versus trying to take care of it yourself, and what that might mean for you. You know, they might have thought, "Gee, if we go to the FDIC now early, they might take us over." And even though they protect our depositors, it's very interesting stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hindsight, you know, is 20, what's the phrase?
2020.
Yeah. I'm so concentrating on banks. I think that's right. And even better, right, to look at getting the job done faster and more accurately is the solution, the software or the team of regulators, you know, whatever the solution is that made that warning sign and force them to hedge way earlier. Mm-hmm. If you're already at the point that you are going hat in hand and saying, "Uh-oh, you know, we messed up, we got to have these losses, you got to give us some money," like, well, okay, that should be avoided because you knew beforehand, and the software is, you know, flashing red light, like automatically contacted the FDIC and they told you, "You have to have a different structure for your assets." No, you can't do that. And of course, that costs money. So the CEO is going to get a lower bonus, and the equity value is going to be lower because it's cost. You know, people look at profitability. That's why they didn't want to do it. And that is the real danger. And it's like any job, faster and more accurately, right? The risk mitigation is a job, and it should have been done way, way earlier.
Yeah. I think it's fascinating. It's a great product story, SVB. You know, they did have a great product. They satisfied unmet needs in an important underserved job where there was a lot of willingness to pay. And you know, they just had another side that they didn't cover as well as they needed to.
Yeah. It really is. It'll be an incredible case study for years because it's just banking failure 101. That's what's so interesting. They did the innovation part for customers extremely well.
Yes.
And hopefully what'll happen now is that, you know, more banks will realize that they should innovate for their customers. And there are lots of different customer sets. You know, venture capital and startups is just, you know, one area. But just in all sorts of different markets, whether you're innovating for retirees or families or individuals, you know, single people, college people, you know, there's tons of ways to look at this and figure out, okay, what are their financial needs, you know, beyond a checking account and a car loan, and
right,
eventually a home loan. You know, the finance is incredibly complex and people, yes, managing their lives. And, you know, frankly, banks have been kind of loan sharking. They get you to get a bunch of credit cards. They want to charge an enormous amount of interest rates. You know, people get into huge financial trouble. In the US, 50% of the population only has $400 to their name in their bank account. That's an enormous market. That's half the country, right, that has an enormous set of financial jobs that they need to have a solution that helps them do it better. And does not mean you have to go get an MBA to figure this stuff out. As we always say, the solutions, the banks should get the jobs done for you. And that's right, what I don't think they focus enough, because they do make a ton of money on loans and credit cards. You know, it's a very, very good business if you don't.
Yeah, it's one of these markets where the product categories are extremely mature and they do throw off a lot of money. And so the innovation threats come up relatively rarely, but they're out there, right? You look at a Affirm and any of the other buy now, pay later products, right? Those are eking in to products that banks and credit card companies make a lot of money on, right? Just credit cards. Yep. You could buy now and pay later. Instead of using a credit card, use Affirm and get a lower interest rate. And it's a better product for a lot of people because it satisfies different needs. And, you know, when they think of themselves as a credit card company or a company that sells checking accounts, they may not see these opportunities and they find themselves behind the eight ball. So you have to extend beyond the product category to identify the needs that your product category cannot serve right now and figure out how to advance what you do and the solutions you offer your customers. And there are huge opportunities to do that in both consumer and business banking.
Yeah. And what's interesting is the banking piece is only part of the job domain. So banking is just a business model, you know, collect deposits, loan money, you know, make money on the spread. And that's fine. That'll always exist. But that should be a basically a boring commodity business. As it used to be, you know, when you had SNLs way back in the day in the 80s. And the interesting thing for the innovators is these financial jobs don't necessarily require you to be a bank, and they're, right, you can be a subscription service, which is obviously an incredibly good business model, which is why there's so many SaaS and subscription services, because you know you get recurring revenue. But in this case, because you're always optimizing someone's finances as the job domain, right, there's opportunities to, you're creating value to help capture some of that by through subscription services. So, and you don't have to be a bank. And there's a lot of this activity happening, obviously, like, you know, the fintech world is very active and innovative. And the leaders, you know, the people that will become the dominant players will help get these jobs done, financial jobs for consumers and businesses, you know, faster and more actually with a lot less risk.
Yeah.
And I think that'll be the, you know, the kind of interesting next level of innovation over the next.
Yeah. And you see a lot of banks who have innovation labs because they have cash and they know they're supposed to do something. But then you see, like in some cases, you see them innovate around the consumption aspect of a product. Like I saw one example where they were giving clever designs to credit and debit cards, make them look more interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe that satisfies an emotional need for some customers, but there are much bigger opportunities out there if you think beyond your current product and focus on what the customer is trying to do and where they're struggling.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, one of the examples that I love to think about, and, you know, we've been looking at companies in this space and we should continue to find one to really help grow, which is the payday lending. which is just an incredibly horrible business and keeps people, you know, effectively under the thumb of a loan shark because they can't get out of this financial trap. So the way to look at that is to say, okay, these customers, you can just extract as much cash as you can for them from them, or you can take a holistic approach and say, look, we can help them make more money, and then we don't have to be in the loan sharking business. And the value of those, the increase in those customers getting better jobs, higher paying jobs, you know, et cetera, is far outweighs, you know, the amount that you can just charge them in the short term until they go bankrupt from, you know, living off payday loans.
Yeah,
great. Okay, well, interesting topic.
Yeah,
hopefully.
Lots of opportunities in this market.
Huge opportunities, and hopefully the end of this potential banking contagion.
Yes.
Hopefully by tomorrow, this week, we'll just have everything will settle down. And I think because the role of the government, they're getting the job done right now, which is insure against, you know, financial contagion. So lots of opportunities, very interesting markets to use for jobs to be done. So thanks for listening. Remember to subscribe and like this podcast. And if you want to learn more about jobs to be done innovation methods, visit us at thrive.com. That's THRV.com.